This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is useful.
Welcome to another episode of Equity Mates, a podcast where we follow our journey in the markets. We break down the world of investing from beginning to dividend so that you can hopefully make some returns. My name is Bryce, and as always, I'm joined by my equity buddy, Ren. How's it going, bro?
I'm very good, Bryce. Ready to take another look at our hypothetical portfolio in this episode.
Yes, it is that time of the month where we dust off the Excel spreadsheets, dust off the analytical frameworks, and add to the Equity Mates hypothetical portfolio, both core and satellite, that we've been building over the last few months. So this episode, we're going to hear a stock pitch from you, Ren. And then I'm going to be doing a quick fire stock pitch to you, given that we have about 16,000 sitting in the bank that we should do something with, considering interest rates at the moment are next to nothing.
So firstly, for people who are new to the show, welcome. You've picked a great episode to come join our journey of investing and learning to invest. But to introduce what we're doing here, we are running a hypothetical portfolio to, I guess, apply a lot of what we've learned in the last 4 years, and, you know, to talk about some individual stocks and some individual ETFs. And the second thing in that vein, just a reminder for everyone, as we always say, this is not a recommendation by any stretch of the imagination. It is purely us trying to get a little bit more practical and to try and, you know, apply what we've learned to real stocks and real companies, but always do your own research, always make your own decisions. We are not experts. We are not financial advisors. We got to just make that very clear from the jump.
Nice. So core portfolio, Ren, the rules were that we had a grand or two to spend each month on that so that we could just demonstrate the idea of consistently putting money into a portfolio made up of ETFs.
Yep.
Last month, October, we increased positions in A200, which was an Australian equities ETF by BetaShares. And we also put money into VEQ, which is the Vanguard FTSE Europe shares. So that leaves a number of options still in the core portfolio for this month. We've got the US equities, we've got Asia, and then we start going into property, infrastructure, and gold.
I'm going to just try and make a rule on the fly here without speaking to you about it before, but I think the principle of a core portfolio is all about dollar cost averaging regardless of what's going on. And so I don't think us having a conversation and deciding which ETFs we're going to dollar cost average into in a particular month is really in keeping with what dollar cost averaging is all about. Dollar cost averaging is about...
Well, that's exactly what we did last month.
I know, but it's about taking the human judgment out of the process and automating the process. And so I think what we should do, if you'll allow it, is we just say, if we've got $1,000 every month to put in a core portfolio, we just go down the list.
Sure. That was the suggestion last month, but we didn't do
it. Okay. Well, let's just do that. And potentially on the portfolio page of the website, which we know needs a little bit of work, but we should just put a rules-based approach there and just follow it.
Sure. So this week we have VTS, which is US equities, and Asia, VAE, which is the Vanguard Asian ex-Japan shares. So that leaves the satellite portfolio. Ren, you're coming in hot with a pitch. Just to remind everybody, currently we have Magellan Financial Group, Citadel, which was a pitch from Ben, which was awesome. Atomo Diagnostics, which was also a listener pitch from Ewan. And then we had the Viva Leisure stock pitch from Daniel as well. So we've got four stocks in there, Ren. Now it's time to add some more.
Yeah, let's do it. I love it how you've positioned this as I'm pitching stocks and somehow you're not, whereas...
Yeah, I'm also going to pitch. Yeah.
So I have two companies that I've been looking at recently that I'm happy to talk about both, if you'll allow it.
Sure. I mean, you will probably talk for 2 hours. I think just keep it to one and you can put one on the watch list.
I'm going to talk about two and you can decide which one goes in.
Sure.
Okay. Do you want me to start with an Australian one or an American one?
Go US.
Okay. So the theme of both of these stocks is unloved. Yeah, I'm theming my stock pitches now.
Okay.
But there's a company that is in an industry that's incredibly unloved, but I think is quite interesting. And that's the New York Times. So traded on the New York Stock Exchange with the ticker NYT. And I guess as a bit of a preamble, we all know the situation that newspapers are in at the moment. You know, it's a tough business. News Corp, the Australian giant, is struggling. Fairfax got bought by Nine. And the New York Times was in a similar situation. So as advertising dried up, the print newspapers suffered. In the US, industry ad revenue peaked around $50 billion, and it's now $15 billion. So a big drop-off. That was mirrored in the circulation drop-off. So print newspaper circulation peaked at around 60 million, and now it's below 30 million. Across most Western countries, across most of the world, a lot of print newspapers have shuttered. Warren Buffett, once a famous newspaper investor, threw in the towel and divested from his newspaper holdings. And the New York Times specifically has also suffered. So their ad revenue and their print circulation more than halved. And at about 2010, they were in about $1 billion of debt. And during the GFC, there was questions whether they could even pay their interest bill on their debt. And people were talking about, can we imagine a world without the New York Times? So that was the narrative around the newspaper business and around the New York Times in particular. But what the New York Times has done in the last 10 years, I think, is pretty phenomenal and has really set them up for the future. And specifically what they've done is turn themselves from a print newspaper business to a digital content business. And they have really disrupted themselves. So in 2010, they were in a lot of debt because they had made a string of bad acquisitions and taken out debt to do it. They've divested of most, if not all, of those acquisitions. They've paid off all their debt, and they now have an extremely strong balance sheet. But probably more interesting is that they've decided that they're going to be distribution agnostic, I guess. They're not going to worry about how people read their news. They're just going to produce quality content and distribute it however they need to. So they've really doubled down on digital. In 2014, they released, I guess, an internal report that was basically just savaging themselves in terms of their tech. And they really disrupted themselves. And they're a business that has changed with the times, pun intended. So as part of this transformation, they've really focused on growing digital subscriptions. At the peak of their print era, they had 1.6 million subscribers for their physical newspaper. They've just announced they have over 7 million digital subscribers. So their subscriber base is a lot bigger. But for me, the really interesting thing is the unit economics of digital is very different to the unit economics of print. And with print, as your subscribers increase, your distribution costs increase. You've got to print more papers, you've got to deliver more papers. And so the costs scale with your revenue. But the beauty of these digital businesses and what the New York Times is trying to turn itself into is that the costs remain fixed and then the distribution is, you know, next to nothing because it's all digital. And so for me, that creates a really interesting tipping point. If the New York Times can keep growing their digital subscribers and keep growing their content because the unit economics are just so much better. So the question then becomes, like, if we need to stop thinking about them as a print business and start thinking about them as a digital content business, a la, you know, Netflix or something like that, is the content actually good? Is the content defensible? Do the New York Times have a moat that is going to be meaningful, you know, 5, 10, 15 years down the line? And more I'm coming around to the answer being yes. And the reason is that while a lot of businesses and a lot of news businesses in particular are really cutting costs and in particular cutting journalist numbers, the New York Times have taken a philosophy where their core product is journalism, and they're going to invest everything they can in journalism, and that's going to be their sort of moat compared to the rest of the industry. And to put some numbers to it, so while the total number of journalists employed across America has fallen massively over the last two decades, the New York Times has actually increased the number of journalists. In 2010, they had 1,200. In 2020, they have 1,750. But more importantly, they're investing in the quality of each of those journalists. So just the average reporter salary in the US, $42,000.
Jay.
The average starting salary for a New York Times journalist, $104,000.
Wow.
So they are just trying to poach all the best journalists from all the best newspapers and be the best news producer in the world with the best journalists. They already have won the most Pulitzer Prizes, but they're going to keep trying to just produce the best quality news. At the same time, they're doubling down on tech. And the list of tech talent they've poached from Facebook, Google, all of that is pretty astounding, because they say their future is a tech play and a content business. And to give you an idea of just how disruptive they're being internally, in 2012, they had 400 people employed in the advertising department. By 2015, the company had fired, or they had turned over 85% of those heads, replacing them with people with more data and digital skills. They're internally reinventing their business. And so the question becomes, like, does this actually create a sustainable moat? And I think it does, because there becomes a flywheel for a lot of these content businesses. So the New York Times is really investing in great journalists and trying to really separate themselves from their competitors with the best journalistic talent, which then leads to better reporting, which then leads to more readers because people want to read that reporting, which then leads to more subscribers and more revenue, which then allows them to reinvest in better journalism. And so one way that this whole news disruption could play out is that while a lot of their competitors, you look at what News Corp are doing, are cutting costs and cutting journalism numbers and shuttering underperforming papers because they can't get the readership and they need to find a way to stay profitable, the New York Times may have cracked this and may be able to create this virtuous cycle where they can continue to create better and better reporting and really separate themselves from their competitors. And in doing so, they could become a very strong digital content business in the likes of Netflix. But whereas Netflix is producing TV and movies, the New York Times digital content that we're talking about is news and is reporting. That's my thesis.
Nice. Do they do anything other than written in their paid offer? I'm not a subscriber. I'm just looking here, though. It's $1 a week. Not bad.
It's not bad. And so, like, there's growth opportunities. Like, they're opening bureaus overseas. So they've opened an Australian bureau. They've opened a couple of other bureaus in other countries. And look, they mainly do written news. They do some video. They've obviously moved into podcasting in a big way. The Daily is probably one of the biggest podcasts in the world. And that's what I quite like, that they're channel agnostic. They don't care how their news is digested. They just want to do the best reporting and distribute it however they can. And I think the New York Times are doing that really well. I think Vox, I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Yeah.
They're doing that really well as well. They're, you know, just doing reporting and then finding as many ways as possible to distribute it, podcasting, documentaries with Netflix, all this stuff. And I think that's the future of these news organizations, to see themselves as reporting as their core product and then being distribution agnostic. So yeah, they trade at a expensive PE at the moment, the New York Times. But I think, as with a lot of these digital content...
it's relative though.
Yeah, as with a lot of these digital content businesses, there becomes a tipping point where your revenue is more than all your fixed costs, and then your operating leverage becomes really quite special. And all that means is really that because your costs aren't scaling, but your revenue is growing, all of that incremental revenue starts, well, a majority of that incremental revenue starts flowing to your bottom line. Mm. So, you know, Microsoft is a classic example of a company with unbelievable operating leverage, where I think it's now like 70 cents on the dollar of revenue flows down to their profit line.
Wow.
Not saying that New York Times will get there, but I think the turnaround that they've done, the balance sheet that they've built, and the opportunity they have to really be different to anyone else in their field is quite interesting.
Nice.
Now, I say this in the full knowledge that there's a lot of free news out there and that a lot of consumers aren't willing to pay for news, and that, you know, Facebook and Google continue to suck up all the advertising spend. And so there's a lot of reasons why this wouldn't work and this wouldn't be a good investment. But I find the business story really compelling.
Well, that was going to be kind of my next question, and I don't expect you to have an answer, but you've said they've gone from 1.5 million to 7 million subscribers with the turnaround that they've done. I wonder what their sort of utopia is, what they consider their addressable market, given how much free news is out there, given how a lot of our generation turn to the likes of social media to actually access their news. And I would be interested to know, I guess, the demographic breakdown of that 7 million.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I completely agree. And I am also acutely aware that news has just had 4 years of an unbelievable tailwind in terms of one American president who just made people desperate to read as much news as possible. Mm. So the New York Times reported their quarterly numbers recently and reported over 7 million digital subscriber numbers. If we put this in the portfolio, I'd be watching this like a hawk to see the next maybe like 3 or 4 quarters. Can they hold that? Or does it start dropping away? Because if people are like, Trump's out, we can all relax, I'm going to stop paying for news, then all of a sudden, maybe this thesis falls away and it was just the New York Times looked really good when Trump was in power.
It's also like, how do you think about this business in terms of who its competitors are now? If it is, as you say, becoming much more of a digital content business, then you start competing with the likes of Vice and, you know, all of those businesses that perhaps, and I guess analysts look at the metrics and will be comparing their growth versus New York Times growth versus Netflix growth. Yeah, I'm not sure what bucket will be, put in.
I feel like Vice isn't the best example because Vice has really fallen away. News Corp bought it and it's...
Oh, has it?
Yeah. It's not great.
There you go.
But I know what you're saying. There's a lot of digital players with lower cost base. And this is the problem with the legacy print media businesses is that they try and turn into digital businesses, but they operate off such a higher cost base that they struggle to compete, with, I guess, the Vices or the Voxes of the world. But I think quality is going to be really important in what separates them. And, you know, if the New York Times is getting this superstar lineup of journalism and if they're pulling in all these Pulitzers and doing all this really quality reporting, I think that's how they separate themselves from the competition, even if they do have a higher cost base.
Mm. Well, Renaissance Technologies is one of the largest shareholders, so he must be doing something right. Nice, Ren. Well, before we... Did you want to do another one or...?
Well, I was pretty uncertain about this. And like, I know my track record of pitching stocks on this show is not great. So I was going to hedge my bets,
No hedging. I like the story behind it, the transformation that they've gone through. It's hard to know where their peak is going to be and where they're, you know, in 10 years time, am I going to be paying for the New York Times? Like, I don't pay for it. Is that just because it's an American newspaper at this stage? I don't know. Like,
yeah, it's a good question. I probably not. I know one of my housemates has just signed up and is paying for the New York Times. And so maybe that's one scenario that plays out. I mean, there's an argument to make that news continues to get more centralized, you know, like we've gone from local papers to state-based, you know, like the Sydney Morning Heralds and the Ages of the World to national media. And that was really TV fueled a lot of that. And now, like, potentially the fact that we all really just care about what's happening in the US politics more than we do Australian politics, potentially you can start making an argument that things are becoming more globalized. And potentially the Times has an opportunity there. I don't actually think that's probably the thesis. I just think they can be an incredibly strong American content player.
All right. I'm not going to argue with too much of your thesis. I think it makes sense.
The thing is, if I was assigning probabilities to this, I would be assigning, you know, massive probability to them blowing the lights out. But
I mean, if you look at the stock price, it's not something that we expect. Well, I don't anticipate you expect this to be sort of 10 bagging over the next.
No.
This is just going to be a slowly tick away if it can continue with the growth that it's been having and with the I guess, execute on its strategic plans. So let's do it.
Yeah. All right.
I'll lock it in. So it's currently trading at, and we are recording this on Friday, the 13th of November. it's currently trading at $38.83, so that's the price that we're going to be throwing it into the portfolio, and we'll put out a social to update everyone on where the portfolio is at. So nice one, Ren. I recall you actually sent out something that backed this all up in Thought Starters.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, yeah. So this has been, I mean, there's a long backstory to this. The reason that they piqued my interest was when do you remember the whole Google and Facebook policy around the Australian government making them pay News Corp and Fairfax for news? Mm-hmm. That annoyed me a little bit. And if people want to understand my annoyance, I actually posted something on the Equity Mates website about that, because really I think the need for the policy is more born out of poor management of News Corp and Fairfax than it is anything else. And so then I started looking at other media businesses that were doing better, and that sort of led me to the New York Times. And then there was actually a 150-page slide deck that really spelled this out that I sent out with Thought Starters. Maybe in lieu of me writing a thesis, I'll just post that slide deck on our website.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. But I think it really does sum up what I'm talking about here. And, you know, it's just a fascinating business story. You know, businesses that are able to disrupt themselves in the face of changing technology and changing consumer preferences are good businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And I think anyone working at News Corp or Nine newspapers can maybe look
Take
to the
note.
New York Times.
All right. So we'll add that in, Ren. Good pitch. Loved it. So we'll keep your second one on ice for now. But if you want to make a mention of the name, just so we can record that it's on the watch list and we can add it into the watch list.
Sure. So in keeping with the theme of unloved or underloved, my second pitch was going to be an LIC, and listed investment company, an asset class that Bryce hates. But this particular LIC I find quite interesting. It's Bailador Technology Investments, ASX ticker BTI. We've interviewed Paul Wilson on the show before, and we actually have him coming up again. But the reason that I like them is they're investing in mainly software as a service businesses, Australian software as a service businesses. And so that sector is very interesting. Some of the businesses that they hold are world beaters in their own right. One in particular, SiteMinder, is a really compelling business. I think if it was publicly traded based on some of its metrics around like revenue and customer base and stuff like that, it would be the third largest Australian software as a service business in its own right. Two reasons that I like Bailador. One, it trades at a discount, like a lot of listed investment companies, but it trades at a discount even though it's incredibly conservative in the valuations that it holds its investments at. And so it's almost already building in a discount, and then it trades at a discount. So there's a lot of value there, but that value is meaningless unless there's a realization of that value for investors. And so that leads me to the second reason that I like it, which is a lot of its businesses are becoming quite mature. And so it's likely that there may be some catalysts in the form of IPOs in the coming years. SiteMinder, Lendy, and a few other businesses are probably nearing that stage. And so, you know, Julia Lee always talks about what's the catalyst for a stock. And it feels like some of those IPOs may be catalysts for a re-rating of the LIC and the discount that it trades at.
Nice. So that was a semi-pitch.
I snuck it in there.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Okay, cool. So we'll add that to the watch list. Take a note that we've added that on the 13th of October. So, Ren, I don't necessarily have a specific stock pitch, but I've got an idea that I think we should execute on. You know, given that we've got about 16,000 sitting in cash at the moment, and, you know, we always harp on about it's probably not the best idea with a long-term view for us to be having a whole bunch of cash sitting in a bank account. I think that rather than beat around the bush and add a stock at a month, there's probably an opportunity for us just to do a mass purchase of a number of the big hitters that we always want in the portfolio.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The stocks aren't really going to require a thesis because...
You always find a way to get out of the thesis.
I mean, okay, so what? You want me to say Alphabet and give you the thesis why? No, what I think there's probably, you know, there's 10 or 12 stocks that we could go through and we probably should at least choose 7 or 8
to put on the list. I like it.
So, I mean, to kick it off, would you be adverse to excluding any of the following? Obviously, Alphabet.
Put it in.
Amazon.
Yep.
Apple.
Apple is a funny one.
Okay.
Nah, put it in.
Why do you think funny one?
Well, it feels like its phone business isn't actually doing that well in terms of growing.
Yeah, it's not.
Its services business is growing, but it's coming off a small base. It hasn't really innovated except for the bloody AirPods that another one of my housemates can't get enough of.
Yes.
But it's a massive company with a fortress balance sheet, so much cash.
It's the largest company in the world.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's a funny one. It feels like there's more downside than upside there.
Yeah, I mean, they've just got so much opportunity, though, with so much money on their balance sheet. I can't remember what it is. It's about $200 billion or something like that.
Yeah.
Something ridiculous.
Yeah, chuck it in.
Chuck it in? Okay. So he went Amazon, Alphabet, Apple.
The most laissez-faire investment committee ever. Yeah, chuck it in.
Microsoft,
given, definitely. Love Microsoft.
Given. Now, let's also think about the... I'm not too keen on Netflix, to be honest.
Netflix or Facebook are a no for me.
Yeah. Facebook, no.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, do you just like anecdotally, how much do you use Facebook now?
Yeah. I mean, this has always been an argument for many years for us, but I think given that they own Instagram.
I agree, but I think, well, you know, I'm a...
And WhatsApp.
I'm a TikTok fan.
Yeah.
At some point, social media companies get disrupted. And I feel like in terms of like the growth v disruption potential and balancing those two things.
Yeah, I didn't think we're anywhere near that for those companies.
I'm a bad example because outside of the Equity Mate socials, which I love, yeah. I hate social media.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean... Yeah, I just still see so many of our friends and whatnot using both of them religiously.
Yeah. Well, as someone who has 5 posts on his personal Instagram.
Yeah. Can't really speak from experience, but...
But then the WhatsApp one is interesting. So WhatsApp, not really monetized at this point, although they are starting to do some interesting things around payments. I'm pretty sure they just enabled payments through WhatsApp in India. And so, like, that could be an interesting business opportunity. But I just feel Facebook, like, the chance of them being heavily regulated and the fact that their Facebook, I feel, is getting out of favor.
Okay, we can put Facebook on ice. That's fine. So, Facebook and Netflix on ice. What about Spotify? I think that's a good one. We need to put Spotify on. I imagine some pretty big things coming with video.
Yeah.
I reckon.
Interesting.
TBC.
Wow.
Heard it here first.
Yeah, I did. I would have thought that they want to be the audio, like just own audio.
You'd hope so, given. I am keen to throw on Walmart.
Sure.
And I'm also keen to throw on, I know you will be, is Home Depot.
Should we just move to America? Is that where this is going?
Yeah, I know. Home Depot.
What about West Farmers? Bunnings?
They did do very well.
Yeah.
They did do very well. Now that they don't have the chain... which was Coles. I'm happy to put I don't want to put Wes Farmers.
Sure, okay. You only want to put American stock.
No, if we want to do Australia and we want to be a bit strategic about it, do we want to try and back in some shorter term recovery stocks
that have been oversold? Like what, Qantas or Sydney Airport or something?
Yeah, I would probably rather go Sydney Airport over Qantas. It's just a bit more of a hedge.
On
broader recovery rather than just on one company.
Sure.
As well as probably some REITs, but I don't have a specific REIT in mind.
Okay.
So are we going to go with Sydney Airport?
I mean, the thing is...
I'm just not sold on this recovery yet.
Yeah. The other option is like, do we say, all right, well, where are the companies poised to benefit from the recovery, but also have, you know, good tech tailwinds? And is it like a Webjet or something that's the...
It's a Disney. What? They open up all of their theme parks again. They've got good tech. No, I'm not keen on Disney.
You own Disney.
I do, yeah.
We both own Disney.
Yeah. Another one that I am keen on, and I mentioned this to you before the show and you weren't, so is Palantir Technologies. Mm. So for those who are unaware, this is one of the big data analytics companies backed by Peter Thiel, or yep. owned by Peter Thiel, started.
Co-founded.
Recently IPO'd, and they do a whole, we've spoken about on the show before, they do a whole bunch of stuff with government and CIA and all sorts of things. And I think we spoke about it from an ethical point of view at some stage. Look, I think the industry that it's in, you talk about finding the sort of growth industries, the industry is in ticks the box for me. And I guess who they deal with in terms of contracts and the ability to sell their product, I think is appealing. And what's your reasoning for not being so keen on it?
I've read a lot about how their technology may, that they may not actually just have a lot of good technology. And it's like, they're really a data analytics play. Like, that's what Palantir are. They're like, we will take complicated data sets and, you know, help the CIA or help US Special Forces or, you know, police departments better visualize that data and then better be able to form actionable insights out of data. There's no disputing that they have helped do that. One of their most famous case studies is they actually embedded Palantir engineers with US Special Forces in Iraq or Afghanistan and did a whole bunch of visualization around like IEDs, like roadside bombs, and helped them massively reduce the number of casualties, US soldiers dying from these explosions. The question though is, this technology scalable? Is it something where they've got a technology and they can go, what they've built in, you know, these major contracts, can they go to like every company and every government agency and say, look, we've built this, this will help you? Or is it that every time they get a new contract, they need to build a bespoke program and software set, or do they need to change their software every time to deal with the intricacies of that organization's data? Because if that's the case, then it's not really scalable and then the unit economics aren't as nice. So for me, Palantir is an interesting one because they've obviously got a reputation, but I've read some things that make you question what they're going to be able to do longer term. Are they like a software business or are they like a consultant, I guess, is really the question.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, let's park it and do some more research. Maybe I'll come back with
a
deeper
pitch.
Yeah. I'll do that. Okay. So I'm interested in Tencent.
Yeah.
Cool. And also, do we want to go down the gaming route? Activision Blizzard, for example.
I don't mind it.
Get involved in that space. And then do you have anything that will cover, I know we've got cloud in terms of AWS, but do we want to cover anything in the sort of cybersecurity space, maybe in an Adobe or Palo,
Palo Alto Networks. I don't think I know enough about cybersecurity to name a particular company.
Neither.
So let's
park that idea and put some more thought into it so that we're not just spraying and praying everything. I think the key here is that all of the companies that we've spoken about, both you and I have been following for a number of years, done a lot of reading on, and are pretty confident that these are going to be here to stay. I wouldn't suggest this be the strategy if you've just started out, where you throw out stock names.
We introduced this whole segment with, we want to try and apply what we've learned and, you know, get better at analyzing companies and get really practical. And then we just bloody name companies that we've heard of. So we've got big tech. We've got some big box retail. What we don't have is really any speckies or anything like that. So I'm going to say next month.
I've got a speckie.
Do you?
Yeah. Yeah, next month, yeah.
I'm going to say next month we each have to come with a speccy.
I mean, I don't want to go too speccy. Like, I'm not talking like a 50 million market cap speccy.
No. Okay, what about under a bill?
Under a bill, but over like at least 100 million.
It can be whatever you want, yeah.
So, yeah, okay, we're talking. All right, sure. We'll.
I mean, yeah, we need to really nail down what our philosophy is here.
Well, as we said at the start, there is no philosophy.
It's true. Unconstrained.
Unconstrained.
I think putting some of these big tech players and stuff makes sense. Like, you and I both in our personal portfolios have a lot of these names. I imagine most listeners have NDQ or a FANG ETF or something, and there's a reason for that. These companies are eating the world. So, yeah, I think it was a timely decision to put something like that in.
So, Ren, let me just recap on what we have put in.
I love it how you were like, you can only pitch one stock, but somehow you've pitched like, I don't know, eight.
So we do.
Are you going to do a write-up for all eight?
Shit. I'm just looking now. We've actually got 17 grand on hand. So we've got Amazon, Apple, Alphabet, Microsoft, bang. Spotify, Walmart, Home Depot, Sydney Airport, Tencent, and Activision. So that's 10 stocks, 10 grand if we want.
Sure. I love it how everyone in the media is saying, like, now's the time to rotate out of tech and go into the cyclicals, invest in the recovery, you know, like the mining stocks, the travel stocks, the industrials, they're the stocks to buy. And we're just bucking the trend.
Yeah.
I think from my perspective, we're not trying to invest for a quarter.
No.
All of those names that you mentioned have long-term defendable moats. And, you know, if we ask the question, will these companies be around in 20 years? Will their competitive advantage endure for 20 years? Do they have opportunity set or an addressable market that gives them the opportunity to be bigger than they are now in 20 years? I think the answer for all of those companies, for all three, is yes. Sydney Airport is maybe the only one that, you know, depending on what a second airport does and stuff like that, but, you know, they're not going anywhere.
I was thinking about recovery, and then that brings me to thinking about oil. And I was interested to know how the big hedge funds in the States are playing this. And you can look on Yahoo as 30 most bought stocks by hedge funds in the last quarter.
Yeah.
And there is an oil company in there called Petrobras, which is, it's actually the fourth most bought stock. It's the largest, well, it is a state-owned Brazilian multinational corporation in the petrol industry. I mean, it just churns out barrels and barrels of oil, 2.7 million or 2 million barrels a day. It does $76 billion in revenue a year. I'm not suggesting put it in, but I'm just kind of saying that if you do want to think about recovery, Andrew Brown's spoken about oil. I'm interested that the hedge funds do have that play in there. So
I don't want to put a Brazilian state-owned oil company in that has brought down at least one Brazilian leader through a corruption scandal and
left them with an awful one at the moment.
The Brazilian political situation is probably not something that you want to be jumping headlong into at the moment. That's going to be a no from me.
That's fair.
One more name that I'm going to throw out there in terms of this Bryce Lesky fast and loose, just throw names out there vibe. Mineral Resources, ASX ticker MIN.
Okay, that's been buzzing around for a while.
Yeah.
What's the thesis?
The management of this company apparently is just unbelievable. It's been an incredible growth story. The TDM guys, when they pitched, actually, this is gonna intersect a few different themes from Equity Mates. So the TDM growth partners at the Hearts and Minds conference last year, they pitched Spotify, but they made mention of Mineral Resources. When we spoke to the guys from Lanyon, they spoke about Mineral Resources as an unbelievable company. If we're talking about investing in
management,
but also the pivot away from tech towards, you know, mining, cyclicals, you know, the recovery stocks, maybe this is a way to play that theme.
Yeah, nice. Okay, well,
geez, we're being fast and loose here.
Yeah, let's call it there.
I feel like in one episode we've undone 4 years of hard work about do your own research.
No, but I think we made the point that we know these companies. It's not like we're throwing in, but we will come in the new year or before we close out this year with a couple of speakers.
Because we're not as familiar as we should be with Mineral Resources. Put it on the watch.
I haven't put it in. So Ren, there is another asset that I would love to put in that deserves also a thesis. And so this will be going on the watch list, but I just want to make note of it now, given that we're probably not going to talk until another month or so. I would love to discuss putting Bitcoin in this mix. I know it's controversial, but there are some interesting points of discussion to be had. So
yeah, the fact that it is running like nothing else at the moment.
Yeah. So let's just mark that down.
I'm happy to put it in.
As of now.
As someone who doesn't believe in it, but
owns it.
Well, I own it. I own it because it's a what if I'm wrong
play. Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's so much conviction from people who are a lot smarter than me that I've got a small holding in it just because.
What
if I'm wrong?
Yeah, fair. I will certainly come next episode with some more concrete reasons as to why I think it's worth keeping in the portfolio if we are adding it now.
Well, up to you. You're more of a Bitcoin believer than I am, so your core watch list or portfolio.
It's going in.
Okay.
Small position. All right, Ren. Well, we will update all of that and put it up on our socials. It is not available on the website at the moment, a few technical difficulties, but yeah, it will come available soon, so we'll make sure
The website is an iterative process.
Yeah, it's a slow burn.
Just like the New York Times took 10 years to turn their tech around, that's the timeline we're looking
we're
at
disrupting
to turn
our
tech around.
We're disrupting our ourselves and going large on the website in the new year. So stay tuned for that. But for now, we will endeavor to put all of this online. If you would like to make a stock pitch and add it to the portfolio, please, we would love to hear from you. Hit us up on our socials or through email, and we'd love to get you on the show. We've had three awesome pitches already, and they're performing very well in the portfolio. In fact, they're driving most of the returns. Well, three of the four stocks have been community pitches anyway. But looking forward to closing this out for the Christmas break, Ren, and hopefully Santa's, what do they call it? The Santa rally.
Santa rally,
pushes all of these stocks up.
Sell in May, go away, the Santa rally. All of these things that are like in year, very short term.
Yeah.
Just before we sign off, should we see how Salesforce has gone? Because you pitched it. We didn't put it in the portfolio.
True, but can we remember when I pitched it? I think it's pretty flat, to be honest. Let's have a look.
You pitched it on the 14th of September. From there, it's flat. It's up 1%.
Okay.
Not bad.
Not bad. I do recall it. Yeah, it did have a massive jump, and that's why I was a bit reluctant. But anyway, it didn't make it, Ren, and that's the beauty of democracy. Didn't get the votes. Look, and if you do have an issue with any of the stocks that we have put in the portfolio, given that it is the Equity Mates community portfolio, again, we'd love to hear from you. Unlikely that we'll make any changes, though, because we're backing in those companies.
Yeah.
Nice one. All right, Ren, we'll close this out in December before our Christmas break, as I said, but otherwise we'll chat next week.
Sounds good.
Thanks for listening to Equity Mates Investing Podcast, a production of Equity Mates Media. Please remember that everything you hear in Equity Mates Investing Podcast is general advice only. The content has been prepared without knowing your personal objectives, specific financial circumstances, or goals. The host of Equity Mates Investing Podcast may maintain positions in the companies discussed. Before considering any investment, please read the product disclosure statement and consider speaking to a licensed financial professional.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.